Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. This is Michael, and we have our 10th program here dealing with the rules for the astral plane. We are on Rule 8, and this is the fourth program for Rule 8, as indicated by the number 8.4. So now we have completed some 9 programs related to the astral plane rules. I hope you can pick these up on YouTube. And when it comes to the first set of rules for the mental plane and the introduction before that, if you go to Makara, which is www.makara.us, you will find 50 programs there. And, you know, plenty to think about with respect to the treatise on white magic. Now, we've been looking at the kind of energies which permeate the astral plane pretty much before it is redeemed, the selfish energy, selfish desire, the energy of fear, and then the sexual energy. And I suppose we can rank them in terms of first, second, and third rays. So we learned just before we went into the section we're dealing with now, the improvement of the aspirant and how he no longer will tolerate being swept out into incarnation without his participation, without his knowledge, just blindly undergoing incarnation, as has been the case in the earlier times. So he now stands at the midway point and wants to control his own cycles. He now has a greater say within the consciousness that is found within the causal body, the ebb and flow as he himself determines it. So he is involved, I suppose, with the council of the Angel of the Presence, Solar Angel, Angel of the Presence. And these consciousnesses are blended, and the kind of incarnation that he is to take and the purpose of it is determined with his participation, which is not the case in the earlier days. With conscious purpose, he longs to walk in the dark places of incarnated existence because he is of a redemptive mind at this point. And with equally conscious purpose, he seeks to withdraw into his own center. He knows he has to work on the outer planes. Those are the dark places of dense material form. And within those dark places, there are still darker places. And as he becomes more fit for service, he will experience those darker places and seek, as the Christ did in his own and in his own little way, he will harrow hell, as it has been called, or attempt to practice redemption for those who are trapped in limited consciousness and in the types of activity which do not correspond to the divine plan. So he becomes, this is the aspirant. He is deliberately choosing his incarnations, no doubt with the kind of wisdom of the Solar Angel, Angel of the Presence, but he sees behind and he sees ahead, at least a little bit, and probably the Solar Angel sees farther in retrogression and farther ahead, because his wisdom is not yet that of the Solar Angel. Okay, so now we get into today's work. The life of the aspirant begins to repeat earlier cycles. He is assailed by a sudden stimulation of a physical nature and violently swept by ancient desires and lusts. I mean, these do not entirely go away. It's a question of how he responds to them. That's the question. This may be succeeded by a cycle wherein the physical body is conscious of the flowing away from it of vital energy and is devitalized because not the subject of attention. So now we're talking about the different kinds of incarnations and their alternation for the sake of achieving balance. And of course, within a particular incarnation, the same kind of sweeping into the material desire and a withdrawal from material desire can occur and does occur. You see this in the kind of example where people who have led a very licentious life withdraw later in their life, perhaps, into a more monastic setting where those kinds of outer activities really receive no energy. I'm thinking about the great pianist Franz Liszt, maybe the greatest pianist of the 19th century, and he was also notably a romantic figure and the partner of many ladies. Later in his life, he withdrew into the monastic setting and probably, you know, to establish balance. He was, interestingly enough, he was a Libra. Speaking of balance, and he had Leo rising. Okay. So this going forth, more in the extroverted manner and withdrawing in the introverted manner, this accounts, especially this withdrawal from the outer scene, this accounts for much of the sickness and lack of vitality of many of our most cherished servers. I guess we really do have to keep the balance, don't we? If we want to be really useful to the hierarchy, even though, let's say, the outer plane and maybe physical things are not of the greatest interest to us, and mental and emotional, psychological things, spiritual things are of greater interest, the vitality of the physical body is paramount if we're going to be part of the externalization effort and part of manifesting the divine plan. So anyway, there's a consciousness of energy flowing away from the physical body and a devitalization of the physical body, possibly, because it just isn't an object of care or attention. But if we don't concentrate on something, it withers. Energy follows thought, and the energy necessary to sustain the physical body, let us say, follows the thought about how to do so. Some attention, at least. And the same process can affect the emotional body. And periods of exaltation and of highest aspiration alternate with periods of the deepest depression and lack of interest in emotional things. And let's just say this can happen. This can happen in within an incarnation or between or among a series of incarnations. So, you know, track your own life experience as far as the periods of outgoing and energetic involvement in outer desires and desires for different types of activity and manifestation upon the physical plane, and maybe the more contemplative tendencies. I suppose the astrology will enter into this too, because, you know, people with not many earth signs or none at all may, depending upon the ray, of course, may not be interested in the outer realm of the senses. DK says, in general, for the aspirants, there is less interest in the outer type of life and more in the meditative, contemplative life. But one must keep the balance, otherwise serious problems can arise. It does no good to be a valued and cherished worker if you just sort of die of lack of vitality. Okay, so with the emotional body too, it's not necessarily meant to be a poor, dead thing. Artists have a considerable responsiveness, and they can pick up the changes of mood and orientation in people around them. And that's good because they can establish a rapport with people. Whereas if you have just a sort of a dead, lifeless emotional body, it sort of cuts you off from others. One of the disciples, RSU, had a Ray 1 astral body. She was, I think, afraid of emotion. Maybe DK hinted at that. She had a strong love nature, but the suppression of astral interactivity, responsiveness, left her with a lonely and isolated position and astral body. So periods of deepest depression and lack of interest. And again, you know, the hill and valley experience of Aquarius relates to this, as he describes in esoteric astrology. So the hill and valley experience relates to this dual process. And you know, it'd be interesting, maybe look it up in esoteric astrology. Maybe I will. I don't know if I can find it quickly. I'll do it, but otherwise I'll just let it go. Hill. Okay. Oh, is there nothing? Sunny. Ah, something's wrong here. Aquarius, sometimes, okay, Q-U-A-R-I-U-S, walk. Well, I'm not doing so well, am I? Let's just try the word walks and see if we have anything here. Well, he walks no longer in the dark, you know. Distressing, that's another one. You hope to preserve something in your memory, but it doesn't always work. High, low, okay, maybe there. Well, no. All right. So I have to give up. But basically, he does describe it under Aquarius. And, well, let me just, you know, I'm a little bit that way. What can I say? A little tenacious. Sunshine. And sunny. We already tried that. And no, it wasn't going to work. Sunshine. Oh, well. Rapidity. Distressing. Distress. Let's try distress. No. All right. Well, then I've wasted 2 minutes of your time looking for something which might have been interesting, I think, but sorry. Okay. Anyway, it's sometimes you're walking on the hill and God's in his heaven and all's right with the world, and other times you inevitably descend. The flow may pass on to the mental body and produce a cycle of intense mental activity. Constant study, much thought, keen investigation, and a steady intellectual urge will characterize the mind of the aspirant. Remember, all true aspirants have taken the first initiation, and we can be considered aspirants even until we become initiates, and even then, in a way, we are aspirants. To this may succeed a cycle wherein all study is distasteful, and the mind seems to lie entirely fallow and inert. Why bother? You know, what can it possibly do? The aspirant decides that to be is better far than to do. I, being strongly on the third ray as I am, I have gone through this kind of thing. And right now I'm working on being and trying to balance it with doing, and maybe you can assess your own life and see how you're doing here, how you're being, or who you're being. Can these dry bones live, he asks, and has no desire to see them revitalized, because anything that study might reveal begins to look paltry compared to being, which contains it all, really. Out of being, all possibility arises. So, you know, there's this always duality and oscillation. Always duality and oscillation. And the opposites prevail. And who's to say, alternatively, who's to say that one's better than the other? We need periods of assimilation, and we need periods of acquisition. We need both periods of assimilation and acquisition. And if it's just stuffing, 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 you know, you're going to get fat in the head, and you'll be carrying the unassimilated library on your back, you know. The camel and the donkey. And we unfortunately probably will be the donkey carrying a load that would be better suited for the camel, as Moria warns us. So there has to be, the law of periodicity must be obeyed. Law of periodicity. The second fundamental of the secret doctrine. Must be obeyed. Well, we can't help it anyway. It's a law, you know. It's a fundamental. We will obey it. The question is, do we do it properly and wisely, and does it work to our advantage, or do we just keep stuffing when we should be assimilating, and do we continue to hesitate when it comes to plunging in for the acquisition of more and necessary material? When you think of what we are, you know, the tiniest unit here. Well, there are tinier units than we are, but compared to the vastness of the universe, we are indeed tiny. And you think about that, and you think about all there is to assimilate and become until we are the source from which the lesser we apparently came. It's a long, in terms of time and space, it's a long haul. And much time will be expended. I mean, we just don't know the cycles. The scientists of today have a certain notion about the duration of the universe, but we don't know. It seems not to square with what occultism is saying. I mean, we have a situation in which the manifestation of a solar logoi, I suppose on various planes, of a solar logos, is lasting 300 trillion years. And the scientists are telling us that 15 billion years is enough to take care of the entire universe. Well, there are degrees of manifestation on other planes as well. So, if the figure of trillions of years is correct, we have a very long time to progress back to that which we have been and are, but progress and reacquire full consciousness of that beingness and that type of universal consciousness. Full consciousness of our inherently universal consciousness. So we'll solve this issue of the cycles as we go along. Some of the masters or high initiates think that the figures in the secret doctrine are greatly exaggerated, and Blavatsky says opposite. She says these are real figures. Now, if that is the case for certain solar logoi, and solar logoi are appearing and disappearing as the manifestation, the suns through which they manifest are appearing and disappearing. What about larger structures, and how long might they last? But anyway, when you put it all together, any definite period of time is an infinitesimal compared to absolute duration. And I want to call it the absolute infinitesimal. There's just nothing smaller, but it's indefinite. It's a lessening, an ever lessening in comparison with absolute infinitude. So no matter how big apparently the universe gets, it's always, in my view anyway, an absolute infinitesimal, just like everything else. So the mysteries of time and space are considerable. And how shall we really solve them? Not with the equipment we have right now. All true seekers after truth are conscious of the unstable experience and regard it as a sin or a condition to be strenuously fought. They do not like their apparent withdrawal and imprisonment in form. Then is the time to appreciate that the midway spot, which is neither dry nor wet, must provide the standing place whereon his feet are set. So maybe we can correct our personal attitude towards this instability by using this kind of mantra. Let's see what he has to say about it. This is a symbolic way of saying that he needs to realize two things. Number one, that states of feeling are quite immaterial and are no indication of the state of the soul. And that is a very hard statement. We usually think, because we identify with our feelings, because we identify with our feelings, we think they are consequential to our real or spiritual life. We think so. The aspirant must center himself in the soul consciousness, refuse to be influenced by the alternating conditions to which he seems subjected, at least in the form he seems subjected, because the form has this habit of approaching and withdrawing, and simply stand in spiritual being, and then, having done all, stand. Right, this is the correct attitude, and have we adopted this? This is the correct attitude. And how successful are we in adopting it? Okay. Excuse me. So he needs to realize two things. The fluctuations don't count. That's the first thing. Ignore the fluctuations. They are fluctuations of the form in its present condition. Okay, what else does he have to realize? That the achievement of equilibrium is only possible where alternation has been the rule, and that the cyclic ebb and flow will continue just as long as the soul's attention fluctuates between one or other aspect of the form and the true spiritual man. Now, this soul that is being discussed is the soul in incarnation and not the soul on its own plane. No, it's not that. That is not really fluctuating. I suppose it has its cycles, as when it sends forth deliberate streams of energy to its personality. But we're talking about the identificatory tendencies of that part of consciousness which is immersed in the personality. So we are speaking of the identificatory tendencies of that part of soul consciousness which is immersed within the personality. So we have to, this is going to go on, alternation is a preparation for dynamic equilibrium. I think dynamic maybe should be added here. Alternation is a preparation for dynamic equilibrium. And again, you know, Libra is involved. Libra does not have to be a static equilibrium. It can be the kind of give and take which is needed to maintain the overall equilibrium. And since we live in a world of constant motion, at least the finite worlds are in constant motion, we have to, whatever balance we achieve, has to be achieved in sight of and under consideration of or in consideration of such motion. We're not looking for a static, frozen equilibrium. No, we are not looking for that. We are looking for the ability to create balance in many flows and fluid events. That takes a lot of intelligence. So let's just say, well, it takes all three aspects, but it takes much intelligence, Libra, Ray 3, to create a dynamic equilibrium. And of course, you know, the will has to be there and the love and for the pursuit of a unity. In this dynamic equilibrium, unity will be a big factor. The ideal is to achieve such a condition of conscious control that it will. A man may be focused in his soul consciousness or focused in his form aspect. I sometimes call this the elevator of consciousness. I mean, we can, and its functioning involves changing points of tension from a very high point of tension in which we might enter the highest spaces of soul consciousness to a lower point of tension when dealing with more obvious presentations. Of course, sometimes we're right here in the dense physical world and we want to have the presence of the higher within the lower. And that's interesting because we have to preserve that higher point of tension without relinquishing the ability to deal with the practical, factual nature, illusory nature, yes, but practical, factual nature of what we're being presented with. So the ideal is to achieve such a condition of conscious control that at will a man may be focused in his soul consciousness or focused in his form aspect. Now, can you, can I, can we do this? Can we change our point of tension so that any one of our vehicles may be the focus at the moment, high or low? I suppose because we have not developed all necessary points of tension, we cannot go into the heart of the triad at will, and we certainly can't go into the monad and Shambhala simply at will, but at length it will become possible. So each act of focused attention being brought about through a realized and specific objective necessitating such a focusing. We are operating on many levels and must accomplish on many levels and have to, as it were, keep our mind on the necessary level. If we're in a dreamy state and we're dealing with dangerous things on the physical plane, the results will not be pleasant. Later, when the words of the group, well, let's see, wait a second. I have a problem here. It's something's been cut off. Later, when the words of something. Okay, so later, when the words of the great Christian teacher have significance, the aspirant will be able to say something. Okay, later, when the words of the great Christian teacher, and what page are we on there? Page 246, and it looks like this is more or less the same place. Yeah, it is. Later, when the words of the great Christian teacher have significance, he, the aspirant, will be able to say whether in the body or out of the body is a matter of no moment. So we will become used to coming and going according to necessity and according to our volition, our will. And we'll do this in a fluid manner, which will be scientifically replicable, and we will not have to wait until the energies are right or we're in the right mood or all those other external things. So this is, I think it's St. Paul that we're dealing with. Okay. The act of service to be rendered, will determine the point where the self is concentrated, but it will be the same self whether freed temporarily from the form consciousness or immersed in the form in order to function in different aspects of the divine whole. So that's very clear. And our motive, in all of this, our motive for refocusing is service. And there will have to be varying points of concentration. And I think, some of the problem that we have is that we're oftentimes focused in one area of the personality or of the, the higher nature, when we really need to be focused in another in order to meet the need of the moment. If somebody, is putting their hand on a hot stove, You want to be able to react very quickly. Of course, they will react quickly, but you don't want to philosophize about it. You have to react immediately in the environment which requires your attention. The spiritual man seeks for the furthering of the plan and to identify himself with the divine mind in nature, at least, at least as found on the atmic plane. Withdrawing to the midway spot, he endeavors to realize his divinity, the midway spot which is neither dry nor wet, must, what does it say, produce the standing place whereon his feet are set. Okay. What we have to do, of course, is to, there are two types of words here, which could easily be confused. And here it is, the midway spot is, I suppose, in the head, but there's a point also where land and water meet, and we do not want to confuse the midway spot with the point where land and water meet. The element of air or ether is introduced in the midway spot, and the area, I believe, is around the pineal gland. So soul controlled and white magic become possible. So the spiritual man seeks for the furthering of the plan and to identify with the divine mind in nature. Well, you know, there are all kinds of levels of mind, and he probably cannot understand anything more than the type of mind which is delivered by the spiritual will on the atmic plane. I suppose there is monadic mind too, but it's probably going a little too far, and logoic mind. Withdrawing to the midway spot, he endeavors to realize his divinity, and then, having done so, he focuses himself in his mental form, which puts him en rapport with the universal mind. Now, what really is the universal mind? Well, let's just say a universe can be considered as a solar system, not necessarily the grand entirety. So, it is the mind of the solar logos, or minimally that part of that mind which is carried on by our planetary logos. It's located, at least it seems to me, located on the cosmic planes, the cosmic mental plane especially. He endures limitation, so that thereby he may know certain specific things and serve. But it's interesting that withdrawing to the midway spot allows him to realize his divinity. And that is something that comes with soul consciousness, let's just say access to soul consciousness. And then, having done so, he focuses himself in his mental form, which is multiple, concrete mind, then the sun of mind on subplanes 2 and 3, and then the abstract mind, subplane number 1 of the mental plane. And of course, there is the transcendental mind of Buddhi, which puts him in touch, en rapport with the universal mind. Certainly, the Buddha was en rapport with the universal mind, but then he was taking a sixth initiation at that time, and it related to his third ray monad. He endures limitation so that thereby he may know and serve. This is the ongoing law of sacrifice through finitization. Sacrifice through finitization. To remain the absolute infinitude of the great absolute is not a sacrifice, but to reduce oneself. Maybe sometimes the only thing you can do when you are that greatest of all things is to reduce yourself, to finitize yourself. So we come down into a much circumscribed place, just as Sanat Kumara has done. He certainly is capable of far greater expansions, but within the world of form, he holds his place, and even is hinted in some books that even within the systemic ethers, he has a presence, and not just within the cosmic ethers that we call our four higher systemic planes. So the server here, he seeks to reach the hearts of men and to carry to them inspiration from the depths of the heart of spiritual being. So beautiful, isn't it? The motive of the server. And here, finitization, I want to just kind of, He seeks to reach the hearts of men. Because if you don't reach the heart, you know, you have not touched the main source of motivation. The heart is the soul. The soul is the heart in one way of applying language. He seeks to reach the hearts of men and to carry to them, you know, the breathing in, fiery breathing in of a god. He seeks to carry to them that fiery breath, that inspiration from the depths of the heart of spiritual being. And let's just say, because he, the aspirant, has learned to stand in spiritual being. Now, can we do that? I mean, even at this moment, can we stand in spiritual being? Would it involve antichoronic alignment with the impersonal spheres of the spiritual triad? Spiritual triad? Would it involve standing as the monad, or at least the extension of the monad, or the projection of the monad? Can we so adjust our point of tension that we can, whatever fluctuations are going on, stand in spiritual being? Again, he asserts the fact, as that first ray mantra, first ray word of power, he asserts the fact of his divinity, and then through a temporary identification with his body of sensory perception, of feeling and of emotion, and this is all the things the astral body is, all the things the astral body is, through a temporary identification with his organ of, it's an organ of sensory perception, of feeling and of emotion, he finds himself at one with the sensitive apparatus of divine manifestation, which carries the love of God to all forms on the physical plane. So is this at one with the astral body of the planetary logos? Or of something higher? Now, our planetary logos has not yet taken the second cosmic initiation, and so there's a little bit of a problem there. Now, let's see. Looks like this has been a jumping up here. Yeah, we're coming to it. So the astral body of the solar logos is not entirely filled with cosmic love. Oh, and I hear thunder, one of those midsummer storms here, which might just wipe out the computer and all the modems. Let's just see. Have a little ways to go. So he aligns with the divine mind, which is in a way his monadic mind, with the universal mind, which is the vehicle of the solar logos or planetary logos on the cosmic mental plane, the mental vehicle, and maybe the higher soul vehicle of either one of those. He will suffer limitation in order to serve. Now that's such an important thing. And when we're, DK tells us service is difficult. It really is difficult. And that we shouldn't glamorize it because it takes a lot of sacrifice of time and interest. And so let's remind ourselves, service is difficult and sacrificial, real service. And something in us may at first feel the pain of that sacrifice. And, you know, are we reaching out to people and inspiring them? What word, what gesture, what radiation of energy will inspire? I'm sure we've asked ourselves that question as we try to deal with the people that need our help. What I've always found is that, well, it makes a lot of difference what you say, of course, but if you can inspire the person with whom you are conversing, you've done a great deal. Inspiration, in a way, is that stage of meditation which follows upon illumination. So you can convey the light, but the inspiration is something to do with divinity itself, something to do with the power, empowering of the will and the presence of being and immortality. So again, he asserts the fact, that's the first very word of power, you know, of his divinity, and remembers that regardless of the difficult, circumscribed area into which he enters. And through a temporary identification with his body of sensory perception of feeling and emotion, he finds himself at one with the sensitive apparatus of divine manifestation, which carries the love of God to all forms on the physical plane. I think it's going to be the astral body which has been regenerated, you know. The astral body of Venus, the cosmic astral body, is very much in that state of regeneration and has achieved some sort of ability to allow the Buddhic energy to pass through. So we're told, you know, monad, mind, soul, astral body, and personality, physical body. Those are some important relationships. So if we achieve some degree of soul consciousness, then a degree of love can enter our astral body and be radiated. And if we go further with Buddhic consciousness, then in fact from the Buddhic plane there will be also the flow of love and wisdom into the astral body. Okay, going on, again, he seeks to aid in the materializing of the divine plan on the physical plane. That is one great responsibility that we have. However small our role may be, it counts. I told you the story that my wife told me about the little bird and the drop of water, repeatedly dropped on the forest fire. He knows that all forms are the product of energy rightly used and directed. And we can say, you know, by the Creator, the Logos. With full knowledge of his divine sonship, and, you know, for most of us maybe it's still a bit theoretical, with full knowledge of his divine sonship and a potent mind realization of all that that term conveys, especially if we study DK carefully, because he will help us with that potent mind realization, he focuses his forces in the vital body and becomes a focal point for the transmission of divine energy and hence a builder in union with the building energies of the cosmos. So, you know, magic has so much to do. White magic has so much to do with the energies we release. The new age will be an etheric physical age. mastery of the transmissive, is it such a word, potentialities of the etheric body will be very important. Okay. So, he carries the energy of illumined thought and sanctified desire down into the body of ether, because he has purified himself, and so works with intelligent devotion. Sanctified desire is somehow being equated here with intelligent devotion. So he has worked psychologically, and he has improved his mind, has improved the quality of his astral nature, okay? And now he carries them down, so he carries the good. The ready aspirant carries the good down into the etheric body and transmits it through the chakras of the etheric body. Now, DK is busy reading minds here, I suppose. You know, they receive these instructions not as a book, but as lesson sets, and later they were all gathered together into book form. You ask for a clearer definition of the midway spot, and it appears to be fluid, perhaps. Interesting. Different for each type, for each type of achievement. For the probationer, it is the emotional plane, the Kurukshetra, or the plane of illusion, where land, the physical nature, and water, emotional nature, meet. So, can we say, in this case, that it is neither dry nor wet? Well, it seems quite wet, but then again, there is this interesting interaction between the emotional vehicle and the dense physical vehicle. And it's not the rational part of man at all. But desire does drive the physical vehicle to do what it will do, mostly instinctually, but then later according to the nature of the desire. What is this midway spot otherwise? For the disciple, it is the mental plane, where form and soul make contact. That's where do they do that? On the fourth subplane of the mental plane. And the great transition becomes possible. What is the transition? We move above the dotted line, as it is said. Where's our dotted line? We move above the dotted line here into the realm of the soul, as that soul expresses itself in the dense physical body of the soul, the logos. The soul has other vehicles of expression, of course, but there's only one consciousness anyway, really. And all the apparently different parts have to do with the limitations of self-perception. Don't ask me to explain that. I can, but it's not appropriate for the moment, perhaps. For the advanced disciple and the initiate, the midway spot is the causal body, the karana sarira, the spiritual body of the soul, standing as the intermediary between spirit and matter, life and form, monad and personality. Is it neither dry nor wet? Well, I guess so. Let's see here. It is neither dry nor wet. It is not wet from emotion. It is not dry from earth. It relates to the element of fire, I suppose, considering the mental plane as a fiery plane. So we can talk about these things in terms of the chakras, and that's what I've tried to do too. The solar plexus looking as a midway spot. It controls the, well, it's the place where drowning can occur. He'll deal with that, of course. It's the point, or what do we call it? It is the point where land and water meet. That's the solar plexus. But maybe in terms of the chakras, what we've been sort of hinting at and looking at the etheric area around the pineal gland in the etheric brain. Of course, DK is raising this from the emotions to the mind to the causal body. And we must learn as aspirants to be stable upon the emotional plane. Okay, I'll just put this in here. As aspirants, be stable upon the emotional plane. Oh, heavens. As disciples, be stable upon the mental plane at the juncture where the 18 subplanes of the personality meet, the subplanes of the soul, and as an initiate, focus and stand within the causal body or egoic lotus. Now, can we do that? You know, can we even begin, maybe imaginatively, to do that? And then that could take, you know, some imaginative practice, and we might then succeed. But that will make our meditation far more effective. So we can talk about this midway spot. We've been given three midway places, and we have to see where we really stand. Now, as a student of Master DK, we certainly have to learn to be disciples and stand on the plane of mind, even if we do not focus our point of tension within the egoic lotus at all times or ever. Okay. As the student knows, there are two centers in the head. One center is between the eyebrows and has the pituitary body as its objective manifestation. The other is in the region of the top of the head and has the pineal gland as its concrete aspect. This is important here. The pure mystic has his consciousness centered in the top of the head, almost entirely in the etheric body. The advanced worldly man is centered in the pituitary region. When through occult unfoldment and esoteric knowledge, the relationship between the personality and the soul is established, there is a midway spot in the center of the head, in the magnetic field, which is called the light in the head. Okay, so here we go. So the light in the head is a magnetic field. Let's put that down. In the head is a magnetic field, and it is here that the aspirant takes his stand. This is the spot of vital import, and those words are not used casually, because the word vital means, of course, etheric. It is neither land or physical, nor water emotional. It might be regarded as etheric, vital or etheric. It might be regarded as the vital or etheric body, which has become the field of conscious service of directed control and force utilization towards specific ends for the aspirant who has become the more advanced disciple. Well, okay, I think we're going to have to, and I'm just going to say, you know, repeat this next time. All right, so let's call this the end of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary, number 10. Oh, okay. Treatise on White on, there I go again, huh? Treatise on White Magic video commentary, number 10. Rules for the astral plane. And rule 8, and it's 8.4, and it's end of page 247. And next time, whenever that is, oh, come on now, beginning of A Treatise, when I have my hand on that pad, there's a problem. On White Magic Video Commentary, number 11, Rules for the Astral Plane. Rule 8, we're not getting out of Rule 8. 8.5, and we're pretty much starting here at 248. But, repeating the previous paragraph. Okay. Well, friends, we're learning about midway spots and where the point of tension that defines our consciousness is focused. And maybe imaginatively we can begin to elevate that. We don't have to really pretend we're going up and down. It's just a question of the intensity of the point of tension. Okay, onward we go, and many blessings. Study hard. I mean, you know, assimilate, apply, correlate, connect, penetrate, and also laterally associate. If Mercury has ray 3, ray 4, ray 5, do all the things that those mental rays can provide, and then our studies will be worthwhile. Okay, see you soon. All the best, lots of love, take care, bye-bye.